From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, welcome to the first edition of Coastline, Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Jim moved here from New Jersey almost 8 years ago. Now retired, he's an artist who works in glass, and he admits he's impatient with those whose views he doesn't agree with.
I'm pretty opinionated on everything. I don't have a lot of discussions with people that differ from me on political and social issues, because I get a little heated and I get a little closed-minded and I shut down. So I'm hoping that this may help me to become a little bit more open-minded, maybe, if that's possible. We'll see.
Catherine is also a northern transplant who's lived in Southport for 20 years. She still works as a nurse, and she's past president of Brunswick County Republican Women and past vice president of the North Carolina Federation of Republican Women.
Politically active only since I moved to North Carolina, which is interesting. Before that, I was never involved in politics. And before that, I was a Democrat and worked in Democratic Young Dems, so I have a vast array of background in that.
Carl is a lifelong Wilmingtonian. He's retired twice, once from the Army and once from a teaching career, and now sings and performs locally with his band. He wonders when it was that people lost the ability to disagree and remain friends.
Disagreement meant that we had to just pull out knives or throw bones at each other or get into some, and I still don't understand why it's not okay to disagree.
Joe is a transplanted New Yorker, a psychologist, and a hypnotherapist. After his family gatherings got so heated, they finally agreed to stop talking politics.
In my house, I have 3 grown sons and 5 grandchildren, and one of my sons is a very progressive individual, and I'm to the right of Attila the Hun. And the instruction is when he comes to visit, we cannot discuss politics.
Lydia is an artist and mom of an almost 3-year-old who's gotten involved with her community association in Carolina Place. She wonders, in today's world, about the relationship between what's personal and what's political.
Where does polite society meet, you know, individual passions and feelings about the political system? And because I've gotten into trouble discussing this issue with other people that I'm not necessarily family with, so it's a difficult discussion, is with the Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the restaurant. Is it okay to politely ask someone to leave your restaurant because you don't agree with them? Or is there a problem there with being disrespectful to her?
Lee started life as an actor, mainly in the theater. He and his wife moved to Wilmington to take care of her aging parents. And once they passed, the two discovered they'd made too many friends to leave.
I will listen to anything because I grew up in the theater. I know that it takes more than one opinion to make anything work.
Connette is an insurance broker for life, health, and long-term care policies. She's also part of a health insurance task force for the North Carolina Department of Insurance. And she says the current system could use some help.
What can we do to do right by people? Instead of having political debates, it's very personal.
Maxwell is a house painter and has lived in Wilmington for more than 40 years. He's also an actor.
I've been involved in politics, helping people get elected. I've always known who the mayor of this town was on a first-name basis, and I'll walk in your office anytime I get ready.
And Daryl, you might have seen him during a Trump rally at UNCW in 2016. He made national news when then-candidate Donald Trump suggested Second Amendment supporters do something if Hillary Clinton goes after gun rights. Clad in a red shirt just to the right of the podium, Daryl's mouth dropped open as he turned to a companion. The reaction went viral. Daryl has spent his career as an engineer and an executive.
You can unite people either towards a common cause or against a common enemy. And it became politically expedient about 20-some years ago to create a common enemy. It was easier than it was to unite them for a common cause.
Over the next 12 months, we hope these and our other roundtable voices will become part of a lively, respectful, and continuing coastline conversation called Beneath the Surface. We'll explore a range of topics, issues both local and national. There will be agreements and disagreements. And while opinions might change, that's not the point. We expect politics to play a part, But that's not the point either. We're focused on understanding how people's lived experiences shape their views. We're working to separate the person from the easy labels, the boxes we like to put each other in. The goal is to cut through the bluster and to listen more thoughtfully and more actively to what someone else is really trying to say. So let's begin. Wilmington is home to its own Confederate statues at the entrance to the downtown area. So let's find out first where our guests stand on this issue. And let's start with you, Carl.
I remember when I grew up in this city, when water fountains were separate and kids couldn't go on elevators and you had to go in the back door of a restaurant or all things of that nature. And all of those actions were a derivative of those statues, of the things, of a way of life that people appreciated, which I have no respect for at all. I understand that people lived that way and that was their life, and you don't just want to erase it off the face of the earth, but I don't think I should have to look at it.
Connette, where did you grow up?
I grew up in rural North Carolina, Ahoskie, a very small town.
And which part of the state is Ahoskie?
That is northeastern part.
The northeastern part of the state. And when you were growing up, did you have Confederate monuments in your hometown?
We had two traffic lights. We did have integrated schools as I grew up in my elementary years. We did not have a town of conflict. There were separations as everywhere. I remember the balcony was for, as they said, the colored people. And downstairs was for white people.
Are you talking about in a theater?
In a movie theater, yes. And I understand how people can have hard feelings over that today, but I didn't create that.
Today, we are going to tackle what is probably one of the most passionately debated issues in modern-day American politics, abortion rights advocacy versus abortion rights opposition. Lee.
I wanted to ask Catherine a question. I went through, I'm childless, my wife and I. We, not for lack of trying, and we had three pregnancies that went bad. And the term for abortion in the medical community is, of course, D&C, dilation and curette. Mm-hmm. And under the Alabama law, we would have been investigated by the state for having a D&C, even under that circumstance. Would you agree with that? Would you think that is that a viable an important thing that parents who are going through that should be investigated?
I've never heard of investigating someone for having a D&C.
That's the new law in Alabama.
No, in Alabama.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not that familiar with it, but
and that Alabama law is the most restrictive
one on the books so far,
which outlaws basically.
That was thrown in to, you know, be the extreme, and that I do believe that
possibly forced the issue back to the Supreme Court.
In my experience, I've never had to report anyone for having a D&C if it was medically, you know.
It was difficult for us to get in Louisiana when we lived there, running a theater in Shreveport. It was difficult for us to get. It was the hospital did not want to perform it.
It depends on the hospital.
And it was a Catholic hospital.
That's why.
I have a lot of emotion about this because I have a personal connection to it.
But there is a difference between a miscarriage for which a D&C is done and an abortion. And actually, the abortion doesn't even involve, in most cases, a D&C anymore. But there is a difference between a miscarriage with a D&C.
But you're saying that the Alabama law is too extreme.
I'm not familiar with that portion of it.
But if it's the case, it would be too extreme.
Yeah, if that's what they're saying. But then again, you know, we went through this with reporting of child abuse years ago. And where, as a medical professional, I was mandated to report any suspicion of child abuse. And we went through that argument of, you know, whose right is it and what does the government have to say about whether or not I beat my child? You know, and now we wouldn't even think twice about that. But I grew up in an era where child abuse was accepted. It's my child. I have a right to beat them. And I saw children die because of child abuse in my arms. And that's why I stand for those children, just like miscarriages is heartbreaking to a couple like yourself. But an abortion isn't always that way. And I'm not saying it's not, because there is emotional, but it's not always that way.
Remember, this is hard. It's why the country is as divided as it is, because what we typically do when it gets hard is leave the room. It's easier to leave the room than it is to stand with the other person, feel all the things, especially contempt, whether it's coming at us or coming from us. Not only is contempt impractical, good luck filling up all your rooms with people who agree with you. It's also, according to social psychologist John Gottman, unhealthy. Contempt causes a comprehensive degradation of the immune system, and it impairs cognitive processes. So it's bad for your relationships, it's bad for your physical health, and that's true of both contempt giver and contempt receiver. So let's go now to some moments that have caused division within our group. In February, Daryl and Kalisa had an exchange that sparked some emails from listeners, but also left at least one of them feeling uncertain about whether to continue with this project. Our topic was education, and Daryl was explaining his experience growing up in a small town in the Midwest. So going back to school, this Charlie person that you mentioned.
Charlie Connors, yeah.
Was that the only person of color in your school?
That was the only person that we knew, and it...
So it was a very white atmosphere. It was a very white school.
Like light-skinned. If there were blacks, that were light-skinned, and minorities, Orientals and whatnot.
Kalisa responds with her experience growing up in a mostly white Midwestern community as a child of color, and how her teacher, who was later fired, accused her of not doing her own work.
My experience was very lonely. I was isolated. My teacher used to say she didn't think that I was really writing my papers. And I've experienced that through high school and college.
Don't want to skip over that.
Sure.
You had a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Who thought you weren't really writing your own paper.
Oh, yeah.
Because?
There was a very specific incident where my mom had to come up to the school because it had gotten out of hand where she had failed me. And my mom said, so first, all the answers are right, so you cannot fail her. But also on this other piece of writing, it's beautiful. It's immaculate. It sounds like something that a high schooler writes. She has a gift for writing. And so it was this big issue at the school. The principal got involved, and of course the principal was shocked and appalled, and I think that teacher got fired.
So was your family's perception that this teacher accused you of not doing the work because you were a child of color?
Oh, for sure. Of course. There's no other reason to fail a child that got 100% on something and you fail them.
Later in the conversation, Daryl comes back with his view of how discrimination is different in the North and the South.
In the South, we discriminate against the race, but in the North, they discriminate against the individual. And what Kalisa was talking about was discrimination against her as an individual. I don't know as necessarily I would attribute it to race, but she's definitely stood out and was different. So you can stand out and be different sometimes because of your color of your skin, or in your instance, is your performance was so above what was expected that they said there must be some reason for that. I experienced a similar situation in high school. A science report I did with my partner, Don DeMott. We wrote exactly the same report and submitted it to the teacher. She gave him an A and she gave me a B for exactly the same report. And she discriminated against me because my handwriting was legible. Kalisa, maybe that's what happened to you, maybe because you were outstanding.
Or it could have been race. I mean,
we don't know.
And yeah, we need to not interpret her experience also. And now we are here with Connette, a health insurance broker, Daryl, retired engineer, Kalisa, a writer and publisher, Jim, a glass artist, and Morgan, who recently earned her master's degree through the creative writing program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Welcome, BTSers. And now we are here with Connette, a health insurance broker, Daryl, retired engineer, Kalisa, a writer and publisher, Jim, a glass artist, and Morgan, who recently earned her master's degree through the creative writing program at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Welcome, BTSers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So there's a lot to unpack in that exchange. But Kalisa, I want to start with you because you shared with me that you felt a little cut off.
Yeah, I felt so. I shared with you that I work with a lot of different diversity initiatives here in Wilmington. And one of the rules that they say about dialogue or conversation is you should never tell the other person what they experienced. So I felt like we were kind of breaking the laws of civil discourse there, where I was told what my experience was without there being a moment of listening and really receiving my vulnerability, that I was sharing something that I haven't really shared with a lot of people before, this experience that happened to me that was actually very traumatic attending that school. But because of the time limit that we had, just to directly answer your question, yes, I felt cut off literally and metaphorically, where we ran out of time and I wasn't able to have a discourse with Daryl like I had wanted to or was able to share my point of view about what he had just said and how like his comments had hurt me. So
his comments actually hurt you.
They did. I was very upset. And other folks that, you know, that I had told to tune in to listen to, family members of mine or friends, were upset as well. So
Daryl, do you have a question for? Does it surprise you, first of all, to hear that?
Not
that,
really.
That hurt her. It doesn't.
I am not known to be the most sensitive person. I'm an engineer, and I tend to think like an engineer, and I tend to be rather blunt, and I apologize for that. I'm not so sure that. I'm not so sure that after all these years I can change, but I do recognize your viewpoint, and I do recognize that you're very sensitive about it. And I notice that many people are far more sensitive than I am about things. It just tends to roll off my back. I tend to be focused on accomplishing an objective. Give me the mission. Turn me loose, point me in the right direction, turn me loose, and sort of take no prisoners.
Kalisa, can you explain to us specifically what about Daryl's comments hurt you, how it hurt you?
Sure.
Like what it meant to you?
Sure. So I just want to, I guess, expound upon what I was saying before about not really being listened to. I guess I felt like I was sharing a story about how I went to an all-white private school and not really needing anyone to tell me whether or not they thought it was about race, but really needing folks to listen, because that's what I thought we were here for, is to listen to other people's experiences, to receive it, but not to tell me or listeners the reason why that happened to me, because honestly, we don't really know. But also, that experience being in that environment where I was the only was very a traumatic experience. And it almost felt like when you said, well, I experienced the same thing, which those two examples to me weren't the same. But when you said that, it almost made me feel like my story wasn't validated, or what happened to me wasn't significant enough to be brought up in a conversation about education and race and diversity. And that's the part that really hurt, that lack of my story being significant enough or relevant enough. Even just the way that you explained it, you said, folks, some folks are sensitive, and I believe in getting things done. And I don't think it's about me being sensitive, although I do have a huge heart. That's something about my personality. But I think it's really about wanting to be heard. I just wanted to be heard for that moment. So,
Daryl, does that shed any more light on where Kalisa might be coming from and why it might have been hurtful to her?
Obviously, we all have different narratives that come from. And I can understand, but I really can't be sympathetic because it didn't. I don't have any background from which to sympathize, I guess. And that's unfortunate. And I think the dialogue, hearing you say that and hearing your sensitivity, is quite a bit enlightening for me. There's a book out said Words Matter. Mm-hmm. And I have been encouraged to read that by my wife, and I have to say that I haven't read it. But
and I'm going to ask you more about that. You're mm-hmm. listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. We're talking with Daryl, Kalisa, Morgan, Jim, and Connette. We're going to be back after a short break, continuing this discussion. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Beneath the Surface.